Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We're right smack dab in the middle of the week, everybody. This is Wednesday. We're at 312-981-7200. You can call or text anytime you like, and then we'll talk to you.
Happy Humper.
Yes. Well said, Wendy.
Or hump him.
Well said. You know what surprised me
what?
Today? I was listening to Steve Cochran's show on the way in, and he had Duncan Keith on.
Yes.
A fine defenseman for your Chicago Blackhawks.
One of my favorites.
And a texter sent in a fantastic question and said, of all the games you've ever played, which is the most memorable? And I was driving and I said to myself, well, here's what they call a no-brainer. He's just going to say one of the championship games, one of the clinching games where he was on the Blackhawks and they won the Stanley Cup. That's what he's going to say. How could it be anything but?
Lost his teeth?
No, it was not when he lost his teeth. But his answer was some game that he played when he was 14 years old. He and his friend scoring a goal to win this this tourney when he was just a young kid, a teenager. And I thought to myself, what a surprise that somebody who's achieved, I believe, three Stanley Cups, right? He's been with the team for
yes.
all three of the Cups.
Yep.
And he's played in, you know, clinching games in the playoffs and big games. But it just shows you that deep down, those moments that you have as a kid, they just never go away. Those are some of the most important of your life.
That's what makes you do what you do as an adult.
I think you're right.
To recreate that lovely, wonderful, fuzzy feeling.
Yeah. So what is it about those years? Why would a grown man who has won three Stanley Cup championships and played in dozens and dozens of big, important games, I'm sure he's had games where he's had multiple goals or maybe a last-minute shot that goes in and the team wins and everybody loves Duncan Keith because he just scored the goal. So why would a guy like that say, well, there's a game when I was 14 years old and I passed it to my friend and he passed it to me and we scored the goal? Isn't that crazy? I love that.
I think
that.
It's sweet and nostalgic.
Yeah.
And it shows you that we all try to find things in life that gives us that same feeling
yeah,
again.
No question about
what
it.
What gave you that feeling as a little kid?
Oh, I could give you a thousand memories. There was something magical for me about Saturday mornings, about just waking up and turning on the TV and knowing I had 3 hours of cartoons ahead of me. I just loved that moment. You know, you'd wake up and you go, it's Saturday and there's cartoons. And then you press the button and there they were. I just loved it.
You sound like my brother. My brother always got to watch the cartoons. My sister and I, we had to dust.
Chores.
Dust on a Saturday morning during
every
cartoons?
Every Saturday morning, we dusted and vacuumed and helped with the cleanup. Oh. And my brothers got to watch TV.
And if you got up too late, Bill, it was Andy Hardy movies.
Right. You'd watch Love Finds Andy Hardy.
Did you watch those, too?
Yeah, I watched those as well. Yeah.
Channel 9.
But before that was the children's the film festival with Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
Oh, yeah, right.
I thought we were going, like, sporting events. Like, I'm thinking, you know, the first time I made a basket was very exciting, and I realized I had a natural talent for basketball. Yeah. So
Sunday's the Jubilee Showcase.
Making the team for the first time as a freshman playing varsity was a memorable moment for me that I just will never forget.
That's why it's memorable.
I know, but I thought we were talking like, you
from
know,
the world of sports only.
Well, you brought up Duncan Keith in this little game, and you know, I thought you were going to go a little league game, but you go, oh, Saturday morning cartoons. God.
All right, I'll go.
Repeater.
He's proud
of it.
It's
not a one-time memory.
Right.
I mean, wasn't there a little league game or something that was like a team you wanted to make?
Can I tell you what it was? We had, all right, so in our little league division in Oak Forest, there was the minor leagues and then the major leagues. And then one year they decided to put in this thing called the intermediate leagues. You were a little too good for the minor leagues, but not quite good enough for the major leagues. And I was in it the first year they had the intermediate league. And our team, the Indians, won. We were the best of the seven teams. So instead of having us play the second best team for the championship, they said, we'll make you guys play the best team from the major leagues. And we all went, well, that's not fair.
Yeah.
We're in the intermediate leagues. We might not even score a run. And they go, no. They won their division and you won yours, so we'll square you guys off, intermediates versus majors. And Las Vegas action was crazy, Wendy. Everybody was betting heavy money on the major leagues. And you know what? We won 7-5, the intermediate league.
That's, you remember that feeling.
That was mine, yeah. It was me and Duncan Keith.
Obviously, it didn't mean as much to you as it did to Duncan Keith, or you'd still be playing baseball somewhere.
Yeah, that's true. That's very
But
true.
I mean, that's that moment that you realize, wow, I do have this natural born talent. That's what I think he's thinking back of.
Well, I think it was part that, and I'm speaking for him, which I shouldn't do.
I'm sure he liked cartoons in Canada too.
Oh, they have great cartoons in Canada. It's Dudley Do Right 24 hours a day.
No,
actually, I don't think they showed Dudley. They had a cowboy.
Oh, did they? Yeah,
right, in Canada? Like an inverse thing.
Oh, maybe it's possible. But I think there was something to the innocence of the game then. I mean, now, I mean, he's doing fine. He's making a lot of money. He's playing for the greatest team in the NHL. Everything's good. But there's something about the simplicity of what it used to be when you were a kid. You know, it was not totally carefree, but for the most part, I mean, there's a lot of pressure on a major league, hockey player right now.
Yeah.
You know, and that pressure probably wasn't there when he was a kid. So
yeah, that's true.
But that was it just meant so much to me to hear him say that was the game. It was 14 years old, but that was the biggest game in his life. That was great.
Steve, if somebody asked you about your radio career, would you remember, like, what was your best moment?
Oh, I'll tell you.
Would you go back to, like, when you were starting out?
The first time I was on the radio, my name was on the radio as I was 9 years old, and to tie it all together, it was a baseball all-star game, Little League all-star game. And I had been hit by a pitch the previous inning.
Oh.
Went out to the outfield to take my position, and my arm just like ballooned up, swelled up terribly. So I got...
I'm sorry to laugh
terrible.
At you.
It was like a Popeye arm.
Wendy wants pictures, Steve. No. Please bring in photos for Wendy.
This is just such a terrible tale of woe.
Sometimes
that is your best memory.
You know, why did they say your name on the radio for that?
Sorry, go ahead.
You know, Billy Graham died today.
Yeah, yes. I know. Come on, seriously. I'm sorry to interrupt.
I realize I've got to leave. I go and I call my parents. My parents, they put me in the car. They're driving me to the hospital. Oh. During the game, we turned it on. Jamie Boyd replaced me in the outfield. I'm on the way to the hospital, and I hear the baseball announcer go, "There's a fly to center, way back, Bertrand with a great catch."
Oh, it wasn't even you.
That's right.
What radio station was this?
WKAN in Kankakee.
The Nook.
WGN put in a bid for the broadcast rights to your games, and we didn't get them.
Something about the intermediate league.
Right. They were excited about our league.
So that kind of covers your broadcasting career and baseball.
Yeah, I was trying to tie it all together there for you. But
well done. Well done.
That was very good. Yep. Do you remember your first professional moment, like in stand-up or something? Can we take a break and can you?
Yeah, sure.
Because I have my first radio moment.
Do you remember it? Yeah. All right. Like, yeah. We'll
okay.
Do that. Sure. Okay. More of that ahead. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. There's no school called Chicago School.
There should be.
You're spreading fake news.
There was an issue with our computer, and I just need to know what browser you use. Do you even know what a browser is?
Mm-mm. Someone who's not sure what they want to purchase. Why is that funny? Hi, everybody. Bill and Wendy.
You're cute.
Duncan Keith made an appearance on Steve Cochran's show earlier this morning.
To talk about hockey.
Talk about hockey. And a texter sent in a question about what was the most memorable game of all time. Duncan Keith's answer, not what I expected. I was sure he'd say one of the clinching games of the Stanley Cup, maybe the playoffs or something like that, maybe an all-star game. He's been in the Olympics. I thought, well, maybe in the Olympics or something. But no, he picked a game when he was a young kid. He was 14 years old, and he and his friend played in a game where they won at the last second on a goal. They did a thing where usually there's 5-on-5 in hockey, and then the sixth guy is the goalie. But they got to the end of the game, so what they did is they made each team pull a guy, then they were down to 4-on-4, then they were down to 3-on-3, then they were down to 2-on-2, and that's when they won the game. But it was nice to hear
sweet.
A grown man say, of all the games I've ever played, he's probably played in 1,000 games, that was the one that's the most memorable to him.
And we all try to get back to that childhood thing. I just had, professional-wise, if somebody said, what was your best moment in radio, probably when I got my first real job on radio after auditioning at 4 a.m. on the Loop radio station. And then later that afternoon, about noon, we were having a family picnic for some unrelated thing.
Yeah.
And Greg Salk, the program director at The Loop, called me and said, yeah, I heard your on-air audition. It wasn't that great.
Oh,
and I'm like, oh,
that was nice.
Thank you, I think. And then he said, but I hear potential, so what would you say if I told you you had the job?
Wow.
And I freaked
Congrats.
Out, and there was an instant party already in the backyard.
Yeah.
With the Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Oh, you guys went all out.
Yeah, in the silver tub with a blanket over it. It was all very exciting.
It's like a party at Jay Gatsby's house.
So that's like my best professional moment
in life.
Well,
that must have made your heart just go
it really,
crazy.
Yeah, you know.
You audition, it's your first audition.
23 years old.
Wow, that's excellent.
1986,
that's
it was
nice.
When it all began, and I'll never forget that feeling. And I do try to recreate that excitement on the show every day, and I haven't been able to yet.
Don't...
No, there was that one day 2 years ago.
Yeah,
we had a pretty, good show. That
but
one.
You do remember that. That's like where it all started. What about like your first stand-up show or something?
The first stand-up I did was at Columbia College. I had talked to Jeff Garlin because I was already in an improv group and we were doing fine. But Jeff said, you know, if you want to make money at this, you can't be in an improv group because you split the money 10 ways. You have
That's
to do it
point.
On your own. And he wasn't the star of the Goldbergs yet, and he wasn't in Curb Your Enthusiasm. He was just a guy who was already doing stand-up.
And I used to see him at the Comedy Womb, open mic nights in Lyons when my girlfriend Carla Felicia was there and Bob Odenkirk.
Yeah.
All these people just doing like open mic night where you got free pizza to get people in there.
And now they're all
Look at that.
Doing okay. They're
so
doing
Jeff
okay.
Garlin's the one.
He talked me into it. And I still remember the first joke I told, which is idiotic. Do you want me to tell
you? Yes!
So,
oh my God!
Are you kidding me?
It's
Wait a minute. Let me. Okay, I'm rolling.
I'm going to warn you right now. It's as stupid a joke as you could possibly. And it was the opener. I walked out and I had an action figure of Bullwinkle from Rocky and Bullwinkle, and he was on my head. And I came out to thunderous applause, and I said, "I used to have a lot of problems with my hair. But since I started putting mousse in it, it's been a much better experience."
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that was very popular. Mousse was very popular then.
And
Bullwinkle
then
meant a lot to you. That's a really perfect joke.
And then there was a lot more Bullwinkle jokes.
Oh, boy.
I did a lot, about 20 minutes of Bullwinkle stuff. Then it segued into my Rocky stuff, you know, and then Professor Peach Fuzz. That was my closer. No, it was then I got very political after that.
Yeah, you did
know,
not.
You want to do some moose jokes and then move on to the politics
and then
stuff.
Move on to squirrel.
Yeah, bull moose.
You didn't
we
do
did
politics,
the bull moose.
Did you?
I know. No. No. Yeah. And your stand-up, I had not seen you when we first started working together. I just had heard you were a stand-up comic. You had been on Danny Bonaducci's show. I've heard you there.
Yeah.
But I never saw your stand-up. And then we were put together and had a lot of fun pretty much right away.
Yeah.
And then I went, you did some...
Oh, there was a show at Zany's I did with Marsha, no, with...
Shirley Hemphill.
Oh, yeah, from What's Happening.
Hey.
She and I worked frequently together, Wendy. We were like the Abbott and Costello of the 1990s, Shirley Hemphill and myself.
But I saw Bill do stand-up for the first time.
Or like the Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney.
Yeah, we were the Ebony and Ivory of our generation.
What?
Right. We would sing that, and then, it was fun.
Bill's stand-up was really sensational. I wish you'd do it again.
No, I can't.
Even for just a limited run.
I'm not allowed to.
What was so great is you are wickedly funny. You're probably the funniest guy I ever met.
Well, thank you.
Just record this for when he dies.
Yeah,
we can play this
at the service.
Funniest guy I ever met, and you never had to go blue, ever.
No. No, I don't know. It was too easy.
Yeah,
Many of the other guys went that route, but no.
Well, we were talking.
I just did Bullwinkle jokes.
Yeah.
Instead of being dirty.
You know, that's the warm fuzzy you all try to get back to. And I have a warm fuzzy to give you. Actually, there's this guy, this listener, Brian, who we seem to take the same route. He works for an auto parts store, and we seem to take the same route every day. And I see him at least once a week and have for the last few years, and I wave. And sometimes if it's warm, our windows are down, and we say, "Hey, Wendy. Hey, Brian."
Oh.
Well, today he asked me to pull over because he had something for you.
Oh.
And I was running a little late, and I was like, oh, all right.
Nice of him and nice of you to pull over. That was very nice
of you. Well, I want to give you this gift from Brian because this is going to mean the world to you.
I can't wait to see what it is.
It is going to take
I wish
you...
more listeners would do this, pull you over and give me gifts.
No, don't go through me. Pull him over. but this is something that you were on. These are songs from a particular television show. And if you look, it is autographed by someone you would know.
I didn't know such a thing existed. It's a full record album called Songs from the Magic Door, a TV show that I ruined. It's on for 19 years, and then I was on it for two, and they canceled it.
Look who autographed it.
Tiny Tove. the spokes elf
yep.
from the magic door.
And what's so incredibly adorable is when Brian gave it to me, he said, please give this to Bill from me.
This is outstanding.
And look, Tiny Tim signed it.
No, not Tiny Tim.
He said that.
Yes.
Tiny Tim was not on magic
Tiny
door.
Tiny Tope.
Tiny Tope was on there.
You were talking about waking up and watching Saturday cartoons. That was on Sunday.
Yeah.
It was. Yeah, yeah.
Didn't
yeah.
know it was a religious Jewish show.
No, I'm like a little kid in a farm town. I had no idea it was Jewish.
Nor right. did I.
Right.
It was I just knew
subtle.
They had big mushrooms that they lived in.
Well, Jewish people, we live in big mushrooms.
Is Tov a Jewish word?
Yeah.
Okay. I had no idea. Steve, I was with you because right. there was, got to be honest with you, there was nothing else to watch on Sunday mornings you guys, unless you watched Mass for the Shut-Ins.
Like when the show was over and you would just subconsciously go to a delicatessen right. that didn't screw with your head.
No,
at all?
And they actually had Stein's Delicatessen in Lyons. And once the magic door went off the air, Stein's closed.
Right.
It was so insulting. We'd finish and my mom would serve me bacon.
No, that's not right. That's not right at all.
Well, that's from Brian
well,
for you.
Well, thank you, Brian. This is an excellent gift. I didn't know this existed. I love this.
I was going to save it for your birthday and say it was
from
me. And the
artwork is outstanding.
No, it isn't.
It's
it's no? retro.
Yeah, it's retro. Did I say outstanding?
Yeah.
I retro.
We can take
thank
a picture
you,
of it and put it on our Facebook
yeah,
page.
Proudly.
It's pretty cool.
I wish
excellent.
We had a turntable to hear the magic door
I
song.
Have one. I can bring it
all
in.
All right. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
Lef. Bill Lef.
Wendy, I have some celebrity stories for today's edition of Marianne's Show Business Report to the Nation. But first, do we want to give something
away? She
is away?
Not working. We could get her to do it here if you want to. Or you enjoy doing it yourself.
I would like to do it, but I would like her to be in on it. Marianne's Show Business Report to the Nation is a copyrighted feature. do we want to give something away now? Or
yeah,
do you want to wait?
You know
it's
what?
Up to you.
I feel in the giving mood.
Very generous today. And we've not talked about your hair yet. We'll talk about your hair at some point.
What is with my hair?
It's different. Isn't it? It is. I'm not imagining
yeah.
it. It is different.
But boys usually don't notice these things.
I'm not a boy. I'm a man.
Let that sink in for a minute. All right. Thank you. We have a pair of tickets to see a local treasure, Bill Murray. And he's doing this interesting thing where he's hooked up. It's Bill Murray, Jan Vogler, and friends, New Worlds. It's at the Chicago Theater. It's happening on April 19th. So as soon as you file your income tax.
And go see the show.
It's a fascinating encounter between great music and great literature, bridging American and Europe. Or America and Europe.
Wendy, it almost sounds like there's something for everybody.
There is. Actor Bill Murray and German cellist Jan Vogler. I don't understand exactly what's going on, but there's going to be like mixed imagery and sounds and like mixed media, I guess.
Oh, there is?
Yes.
Then I will go to that.
Because you have German cellist and then you have literature and then you have Bill Murray. So it sounds fascinating to me, and the phones are going crazy, and I haven't even announced this yet.
If you don't
yet.
Like comedy, you can hear the cello. If you don't like the cello, you can listen to comedy. But as you know, I say this all the time, there's always room for cello, Wendy.
Let that sink in, too. You are a man.
I just proved it.
Right, because a boy wouldn't know
why would a boy
that,
say that
logo
a man
or
be
right, slogan.
Right.
312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. A pair of tickets right now to see Bill Murray, Jan Vogler, and friends, New Worlds. It's at the Chicago Theater on April 19th. So let's do caller 19.
I like it.
312-981-7200.
All right. Bill Murray and Jan Vogler together, the mm-hmm. way God intended. All right. It's time for Marianne's Show Business Report to the Nation. You know who Daniel Craig is, of course.
Yes, I do. He's the most recent?
He's current James
yes,
Bond.
Yes, current is
he's
the word.
He's current
like,
James
ding, ding,
Bond.
Ding.
He followed other great James Bonds, and when he got the job, I said, oh, this is a travesty. He can't be James Bond.
A lot of people thought that.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
He's done a nice job as James Bond.
He's
I
not
thought
your
it
favorite.
Been
but...
Clive Owen should have been
yeah.
James Bond, I thought, but I was wrong. Daniel Craig came in and nailed it. Great James Bond. I think we have a winner.
Yes. May I interrupt Marianne's showbiz report
yes.
to the nation?
Yes.
Richard from Paw Paw will be bringing his mawmaw. I'm a woman.
We're going to have to pay people
Roar.
Back for listening to the show today. We're going to owe people money for listening to the show.
Are we going to do an album of this show?
This is going to the Museum of Broadcast
Remember
Communications.
Earlier we were talking about most memorable moments.
Right.
This is it.
All right, Richard from Paw Paw. Isn't that Michigan?
Yeah, that's in Michigan.
There's
yeah.
actually a Paw Paw in many states.
Oh, there is?
Can you ask which Paw Paw he's in?
There's a Paw Paw, Indiana, I know.
Yeah?
Is it Indiana? I mean, Paw Paw, Michigan? Or...
And Steve, are they all linked through a series of tunnels?
Kitty cat paws. Paw Paw, Illinois.
See, I didn't know such a
there's
place
a lot
existed.
Of, there's a lot, I don't know if it's an Indian name, but there's a lot of Paw Paws around.
All right.
Can we talk to him? I got it. This is exciting for me.
All right.
Hey, Richard.
Yes.
I didn't know there was a Paw Paw, Illinois. Neither did Bill nor Steve.
News to us.
Well, I did.
And, Steve, and neither did so I moved out there. I moved out there about 25 years ago, and it's about a mile west of DeKalb County, and I actually have a job in DeKalb County, so it's really not that far for me to go. But, yeah, I didn't realize there was a Paw Paw, Illinois either. I used to go to Paw Paw Lake, Michigan.
Yeah.
But totally different.
All right, I stand corrected. Steve Bertrand wants it to be known that he did know there was a Paw Paw, Illinois.
Did I say that?
Yes.
Yeah, you knew.
But Richard, you're going to be able to make the trek all the way to the Chicago Theater, I hope, to see Bill Murray and Jan Vogler, correct?
Of course.
Awesome.
That's exciting. Are you kidding? Yeah.
That's going to be fun.
Wait, ask, do you know what Paw Paw, where the name comes from?
Paw Paw is actually a fruit. It's they call it the Midwest banana, and apparently back
that was Bill's name too.
The Midwest
not
banana.
For air. Cut it out. That's not nice. Stop it. That's not nice.
But yeah, I guess.
Go ahead. They're not laughing at you. They're laughing. We're laughing with you.
Well, no, and the settlers back, you know, hundreds of years ago, they lived on pawpaws, and actually they're doing a lot of research on pawpaws. They have they're a high antitoxin in the bark and in the leaves and things like that. So they're doing a lot of research on that.
It is a lyric. You know the song Bare Necessities from the Jungle Book?
Yes.
Baloo sings a lyric, yes. If you pick a pawpaw or a prickly pear.
Hmm.
So there it is.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
Again,
yeah.
He's a man.
Let the record show, Your Honor.
Well, Richard, can I just tell you that you are so informative, because I think Steve Bertrand was trying to catch you when he asked you about Paw Paw.
No, really.
Look at you.
I wasn't trying to catch him. I didn't have any idea where the name was from. No.
Well, this was really fascinating.
I am growing they grow in patches, and I have a pawpaw patch down in a lower part of my property.
Oh.
And,
let's, for the record, that's medicinal pawpaw. We don't want to get you in any trouble.
I'm trying to picture this. So you have a pawpaw patch in the lower part of your property. Okay.
Oh, my
right,
God.
Right. And they're good. They're really good. We put pawpaws when we pick them in our smoothies.
You do?
Oh, my God. We got to hook them up with Dave Ennett.
I think we got to.
Dave would love it.
Maybe Bill Murray will put him on stage.
Yeah, you are. Somebody has just texted us and said they want us to do a Paw Paw podcast from your place in Paw Paw, Illinois.
Hometown Voices.
Let's do it.
All right.
All right. Well,
we'll
Richard, congratulations. It was a pleasure talking to you.
All right. Thank you, Wendy.
Good luck, Richard.
Oh, my God.
Is everyone in town as nice as Richard? He seems like a nice man.
I mean, if you think of it, I wonder, because it's obviously a banana is a tropical plant, right?
Right.
So what a Midwest banana would be like, I mean, would you peel it or?
Oh, I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
You
but
would?
He said bark, so the pawpaw tree.
Yeah.
I'm going to look it up.
All right.
Look at this.
Yeah.
We get, you know, Chicago's stinky onion. I'd rather have it mean Midwest banana.
It's got a better ring to it, doesn't it? It does. All right. A quick break.
Bring him out. Bill left.
A quick break. That's not funny. And then we'll continue with Marianne's Show Business Report to the Nation. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. Can I play a little something for
you?
Yeah.
What do you got? Sure.
Someone texted this in.
And you say you don't like Maroon 5.
Come on, kids. Let's go find him. Come on, kids. Let's go find
Hang
him.
On.
Come on, kids. Let's go find him. Way down yonder in the pawpaw patch.
I never
it
knew.
Oh, my gosh. Sense. I remember this.
Do you remember
you
that
do?
Song, Mary?
It's creeping me
From
out.
From where?
I don't know. My childhood.
Nightmares as
Apparently.
A child?
Oh, wait. Here's the best part. Shoot.
What?
Hang on a second.
All right.
All right.
You're going to top what you've already played? I don't think so.
pawpaws, put them in your pockets. Picking up pawpaws, put them in your pockets. Picking up pawpaws, put them in your pockets. Way down yonder in the pawpaw patch.
I removed the best part, so sorry.
So I'm looking at the pawpaw plant, and it looks like a big banana. I mean,
it really
looks like a tropical plant. Yeah,
really. So could you go into a store today, a Mariano's, a Jewel, and buy them? Are they in your grocer's freezer?
I never heard of them until.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is a different one. Never mind.
Is there a whole album of pawpaw music?
No.
Play the Cars for Kids one. Do they do that?
Boy, it does sound the same. But I don't know if they're here in Illinois. You're right. Why can't you go get them in the produce section? They have the ugly fruit.
Yes, they do.
Why can't they have pawpaw?
They have very bizarre fruit there. You'd think the pawpaw would be sold prominently, being so local. I'm surprised.
They don't really look like bananas.
Let's see. What does it look like?
They look like... Hang on, I got pop-up windows happening here. It's like a seed, a giant pod.
Yeah.
It's not really a banana. Does your banana look like that? I know it's a personal question.
I'm going to get an attorney. it looks like an eggplant to me. Was it more eggplant looking than banana?
Seeds in it.
Yeah, an eggplant with seeds.
Like
who wouldn't enjoy that?
Well, no two pawpaw look exactly
like. No, that's
like.
True, too. Steve brings up a good point.
It's got a lot of vitamin C in it.
Yep.
I didn't know anything about a pawpaw.
And now we know too much.
And we've got Bill Murray to thank for it.
Actually, he should put this into his thing with Jan Vogler.
Yeah, they should give you the history
they
of the...
They should sing the pawpaw patch with cello.
You got to close the show with that.
In the pawpaw patch.
You can't do that early in the show because you'll never top that.
All right, well, I'm sorry I interrupted Marianne's showbiz report to
the
nation.
That's why we can't get sponsors for it, Wendy. Too many interruptions. All right, so here's the story. And it's about Daniel Craig, who, as we pointed out, is currently James Bond. He hadn't been seen in a while, and then he showed up at the 71st British Academy Awards. This was in London last week, a couple of days ago.
Hello!
And that was not an actuality, right?
That was just
you. And he looked completely different.
What are you saying?
Like, he looks like... I know that this will sound cruel... But did you ever go to a wax museum where they feature today's stars? Like, not like Mark Anthony and Cleopatra and not Noah and Moses, but guys that are around now. And you look at them and you go, oh, that doesn't look like them. That looks like a wax figure of them.
Yeah, because it is.
Yeah, it is a wax figure of them. But that doesn't look like Tom Hanks. That looks like a statue that looks like
Tom
Hanks.
You can tell it's very fake.
Right.
Yes.
Well, that's how Daniel Craig actually looked. He looked like a zombified version of himself. He was all puffy and he was all pasty and white.
It's very weird because if it's any kind of plastic surgery, it's made him look worse.
Yeah.
He looks older.
He looks way older.
His you're right. He looks very waxy. There's no color to his skin.
Looks like a Madame Tussaud version of Daniel Craig.
Well, maybe
so.
Yeah, looks like her.
Maybe he's ill and...
Oh, I hope that's not the case.
Oh, God, wouldn't that be stinky?
I hope that's not the case.
Yeah, I know you hope that because you just announced this.
I do hope that. Well, everybody on Twitter is going nuts, going, hey, we want our original Daniel Craig back. You can't fool us.
You guys, maybe he stopped doing the stuff. Remember when Renee Zellweger stopped using all the Botox and everything?
Yeah.
And then people were commenting on her appearance as well. That's what it looks like. It looks like perhaps he stopped getting trimmed and tucked and pinned. And
do you think that was it? You think all along he's been doing the treatments?
He looks
eerie. He looks like a scary version of Daniel Craig.
He looks like Walking Dead Daniel Craig.
But you could, right.
He does.
But if he announced a year ago that he's going to be, for a while, he wasn't going to be James Bond anymore. He said, I've been James Bond. I don't want to do that anymore. And then they showed him a picture of his paycheck and he went, all right, I could be James Bond again.
For
I'll
one
do,
more
I'll do
until
one
my
more.
Looks fail.
But now if they were shooting that now,
makeup.
You couldn't really? Is
yes.
there enough makeup to fix this? I think
you
postpone it.
You are so superficial.
You gotta
showbiz report.
You can't
report.
Have James Bond look like this. You know the women that go nuts when James Bond comes by? They would scream. They would go, I don't want to, I'll date someone else. I'll go out without a job. Is he still in the movies?
I don't know.
I don't know if Odd Job is still in the movies.
The Rock plays him now.
That might be someone else. I don't know who it is.
I don't know what the reason is, but he does look completely different.
He looks entirely different.
When's the last time we saw him out in public, though? Because has it been like...
He did last year when they announced, when he announced that
he is
coming
back. So this is in a year's time?
Yeah, less than a year. It was like in the summer, he made the circuit on all the talk shows because he had some movie out, but he was also saying, I'm going to be James Bond again. I didn't think I wanted to be, but I was wrong. I'll be James Bond. But now this, I don't know what it is. But you saw him.
Yeah.
It's a very spooky looking version of him. I hope he's not sick. I hope that's not it. But then can you hope that it was just plastic surgery gone awry? That's
or
a weird,
not. I mean, maybe he gave, you know.
You're saying he stopped the
treatment. Yeah, if he wasn't, you know, doing any appearances for a while, he didn't go get the Botox done.
Yeah, maybe.
But just his very sallow complexion.
Yeah, he's all white.
It's very
puffy.
Huh. Who are we to judge?
Who are we to judge? All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll judge some more.
Yeah, we
there'll be more
will.
Judging ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, I'm about to have fun, I have a feeling.
Wendy, I think you will. Every other Wednesday, Dane Neal comes by, and we talk about food, and today happens to be every other Wednesday. So hello, Dane Neal. How are you?
Hello.
Nice
hello,
to see you.
Guys. Good to be seen. And it's not just food, Bill. It's also food and drink.
Food and drink.
And things like
libations.
That.
And merriment.
Yeah.
You know, oftentimes with a highlight on the very best of Chicago and as it applies to the greater world. And this is no exception. I'm excited to be able to have him in here, especially while we're still at Tribune Tower because of the history. Just the is it Chicago-ness, right? Or the real Chicago-osity of it? I'm
that's
not sure.
The correct terminology.
Yeah, I think that's
yes,
the correct terminology.
Chicago-osity.
For those people that are in the spirit world, and I don't mean in the paranormal, and I mean in all things great and drinkable, few spirits is one of those that is almost second to none. All around the world, acclaimed awards, all that kind of stuff. And to have them here, and Paul Halecko is the founder and distiller for Few Spirits, and a hometown guy, especially for you, Bill, right?
Mm-hmm.
Evanston,
yeah.
Illinois, starting this and being one of those first distillers to do whiskey here in Chicago that is now enjoyed in 35 countries. So excited to have Paul Halecko. Paul, welcome to WGN.
Oh, thanks, Dan.
Glad you're here, Paul.
Real excited to be here. Always love being on WGN. Like you said, I'm a Chicago guy, and you know, it does not get more Chicago than GN.
Can I ask you, there was a time not long ago that Evanston was a dry town. So how does it go from being a dry town to having being the proud home of a distillery like yours?
Well, the history is basically me.
It is you. Isn't it?
I came with the idea of having this distillery, and you have to put it somewhere. And I decided to put it in my hometown. I live there. My kids go to school there. I was on the PTA there. And so I started a distillery and had a real problem because it would be rather illegal.
Yeah. There's that.
So
right.
Went to the city and worked real hard, and but together with the cooperation and help from the city, we made it happen.
You didn't want Elliot Ness coming in with an axe and crushing the barrels.
I'm sure he did
stuff.
A couple times.
He tried to. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with a little bit of axe here or there. It's just between friends, right?
So did you had to convince, I'm guessing, the town elders that this was a good idea, right?
Honestly, it wasn't that hard to convince because everybody kind of heard the idea and said, yeah, that's a great idea. We
yeah.
should do that. That said, it's still a lot of work. I lost track of how many city meetings I went to after 15 of them. But I never took a single no vote. And, you know, working with the city of Evanston has been fantastic from day one.
It's a win-win for both. I mean, now that they've worked with you, it's definitely helpful to them as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've been able to kickstart a decent amount of capital investment in Evanston. And so while we are the first alcohol ever in the birthplace of Prohibition, we've now been joined by four breweries, two brew pubs and two production breweries. There's a cidery in town now. And cool restaurant after cool restaurant's opening up. And it's fantastic seeing, you know, Evanston turn into the destination for the North Shore, and a good fraction of the city comes up to us as well.
And now people are coming to Evanston for more than just Heckies, which of course was the, you know,
for a while,
for the longest time. I love those stories. And when it comes to a business card, and maybe it's just me, but I think there's not very many, you know, cooler things. Maybe like, you know, fighter pilot, race car driver. I like barbecue pitmaster. I'm a big fan of that. But but distiller of spirits is one of those. And it's one of those things I know that a lot of listeners hear that and they're inspired. They've got ideas. And granted, to go from point A to point Z is a difficult thing. But I love that story. If you could, you know, where you just threw away the trap trappings of your, I guess, less amazing life that you lived in the past, and just dove into this. Like, how did you choose to do it?
I kind of chose to do it, honestly, a little bit by accident, or not necessarily even by choice. But I've always tried to be a creative person, and then I had this idea. Prior to World War II, my grandpa's family owned what is now a major brewery in the Czech Republic.
Mm-hmm.
1939, people have probably heard, there's a little bit of a war happened. The Germans invaded Czechoslovakia, took the brewery, took everything around, and my grandpa's family, the entire family, went to the camps. He survived, but you know, all of his brothers and sisters were killed, his parents were killed, grandparents were killed, aunts, uncles were killed. Literally the entire family was murdered in the camps, except for him. And after the war, he spent the rest of his life trying to get the brewery back, but never did.
Mm.
And when he died, it kind of struck me that if I didn't do something to re-engage or touch this family legacy,
yeah,
or history, it was going to be gone forever. And I didn't really want that. You know, family is important to me as it is to, you know, all of us in the room, and I assume everybody listening at home. Family matters. It's kind of all you have in this world. And so once I had the idea to do a distillery with the family legacy and the family history, I didn't really have much choice.
This sounds like a novel. You know that, right? It sounds like a book. What were you doing at the time when you decided that this was the direction you were heading in?
At that time, I was running a company that designed and built custom guitar effects pedals.
Still creative.
Still creative.
Yeah.
I had a day job pushing paper from one side of a desk to another.
Yeah.
Turns out that's not super satisfying.
Not for a creative type such as yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, I was always trying to find new and creative things to do, and turns out that I'm kind of good at making booze.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there are times that I want something to eat and I can't go to a restaurant to get it, so I'll kind of recreate it myself, but it's one and done. I don't usually do it very many times. Do you just all of a sudden decide, I have a taste for some rye whiskey, I'll make some? I mean, how does that start?
It starts off one foot in front of the other. You decide you want to do it, and then you do it. So, I mean, with Few, we're constantly, we're always making our core products, which would be the Few Bourbon and the Few Rye, mm-hmm, which are our number one and number two sellers. But we're also, everybody at the distillery is there for that creative process and to make new things. And it's always fun to, you know, explore that creative process and make new stuff by ourselves, but also make new stuff with friends of ours and collaborate with other people around Chicago and around the world.
See, on the collaboration side, you know, of course, we apologize, the paper pusher community is up in arms, I'm sure, right?
Sure, you're getting a lot of texts. They are.
Maybe a collaboration with them would be great, but usually the only way that you can collaborate is go out there, purchase it, enjoy it, and people have done that to the tune of, like I said, 30 countries, 30 plus countries now at this point. But one of the really cool things, and maybe we'll talk about it like in the next segment, is those collaborations where not only, you know, great bands, great brands, you know, individuals have gotten together and tried to get and participate with Few and kind of making some of these one-off and very specialty expressions, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, GN in Chicago, we've got a edition out with the Drake Hotel.
Nice. Very
nice. You can go to the Drake Hotel and you can find our bottles specially labeled with them. Mm-hmm. We worked with the Drake Hotel to make, you know, all of our own rye whiskey.
We'll discuss that and more next. It's Bill and Wendy along with Dane Neal and Paul from Few Spirits is here. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 will get that done. More after this.
Whiskey River, take my mind. Don't let her memory torture me.
Did you just do a shot of whiskey?
I had the sippest of all sips.
The smallest of all sips? He's already buzzed.
Like a 100th of a sip.
With a crazy straw that Bill carries with him. He's got a whole kind of little case he opens up.
I have a utility belt that has crazy straws in it.
I am just taking a whiff of, but now I like rye whiskey as opposed to, what did Bill have from Few Spirits? What is that kind of whiskey?
Weilers.
They're both ryes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They both are?
Yep.
Okay.
Weilers.
What do you think? Oh, you haven't drank yet. Try a little. What do you think?
It's smooth. Mm-hmm. It's strong. Mm-hmm. It's strong. That's why whiskey. I like a Manhattan mixed with, what's in a Manhattan?
It's going to be rye whiskey, sweet vermouth, bitters, and a cocktail cherry. Luxardo or another kind.
They're like $20 a bottle, the Luxardo cherries, but they're so little syrupy. It just makes the drink so much better.
They're fantastic.
You told us something about vermouth that we didn't know.
Vermouth is a wine-based spirit, and so it will spoil once it's open. So a lot of times people at home think their cocktails they make with vermouth don't taste the same as when they're in the bar.
They don't ever.
And that's primarily because the vermouth has probably gone bad.
What's the shelf life on it usually?
3 to 6 weeks.
Oh, that's all.
So it tends to be pretty fast.
We have some from when I graduated in high school. Should actually throw that away probably.
It's commemorative though.
Yeah, it is.
It's worth
solid
the investment
now.
In
yeah.
Oh, all right. We'll invest in a new bottle.
So, a few spirits loved here in Chicago, and Paul Hlecko, the founder, is with them. One of the things that I thought was really cool, and before we get into some of the collaborations, which I think are great relationships and partnerships where people are getting in involved with Few, is I was surprised. Okay, 35 countries, that's, I guess, understandable, you know, that people love it that much. But is it Finland, right, where you guys have, you've cornered the market?
Yeah, it's always interesting when I travel around and see Few out in the world. I was just in Finland, and we have about a third of the high-end bourbon market in the entire country of Finland, all based from this little distillery down an alley in Evanston, Illinois. We have about a third of the high-end bourbon market in Finland.
How does I that know, happen?
Yeah, you're not complaining, obviously, but what
it's
took
like
place?
It's like Hasselhoff right. in Germany.
Right.
We're loved in Belgium.
I'd asked him if maybe Few in their native language says something really enticing.
Right, maybe that's it.
Honestly, I don't know, but I think the... You know, people around the world connect and engage with what we are doing, and people get excited about this creative process, and people get excited about alcohol, obviously. And it's been really fun that we have this outsized influence in Finland, and a country I've never been. I walk into a liquor store and we're everywhere.
And it's not through advertising or marketing or anything like that. It's just happening on its own.
Yeah. It's actually illegal to advertise or market spirits in Finland.
Really?
There's zero marketing, zero advertising.
For alcohol of any kind?
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Very interesting.
Well, here's the thing. It's one thing
which
that,
I just learned.
It's one thing to collaborate with, let's say, a band or a hotel like the Drake or whatever, and kind of capture the vibe of what it is that they're doing.
Yeah.
It's another on a food product. So I was excited to see for Dark Matter Coffee, of course, a Chicago, caffeine institution, relatively new, but certainly, beloved. And you guys are how are you going to work with them? Is it going to be a coffee inspired expression?
Absolutely, man. Few is Chicagoland spirit, and Dark Matter is Chicagoland's coffee. And so it was natural. We had an opportunity to work with them.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anybody knows those guys, but they're great guys. And we had the idea of taking our barrel-aged gin, which is a gin we make that we age in barrels, and combining it with Dark Matter Coffee, which is, of course, absolutely killer coffee. And so we take this 60% alcohol gin, and we cut it down to bottling proof with Dark Matter Coffee. So roughly 20% of the bottle will be Dark Matter Coffee, with the rest being booze. And
there's your iced coffee, boy.
It will get you going in the morning. I'll tell you what.
I was going to say, there's not directions on the bottles, but is this supposed to be like a breakfast beverage?
There's certainly no reason why it can't be. We do actually offer and sell a true breakfast gin, which is labeled right on the bottle.
Yeah, I saw that. What is breakfast gin?
It's the most important gin of the day, of course.
Ah. Right.
Did you have to experiment a little bit with the ratio of your product and the coffee product? You said it's 60-40 right now. Is that what it is?
Well, we just took our gin out of the barrel, and we wanted to cut it to proof with the coffee. So it's a mathematical formulation. Oh. But it works out to about 20% of the bottle is coffee.
Yeah.
And anybody who's ever had Dark Matter Coffee knows those guys enjoy their caffeine quite a bit. Maybe not as much as I do, but they like their caffeine.
Wow.
One of the other things, too, in Italy, of course, our good friends there, we've had them in on a number of occasions. And although you've got a lot of the products from Italy and all over the world and things like that, they try to have collaborations and source local products. A lot of the farms and the produce and a lot of the different products are local. And it was cool to see that you guys, how are you going to be working with Italy coming?
Working with Italy is amazing. And we worked with them to get access to some Sicilian wine barrels from our friends at Donna Fugata, which is a winery in Sicily. And so they sent over some Italian wine barrels, and we finished our bourbon in there with our friends at Eataly. It's now available at Eataly. They've got some shelf stackers. They've got some floor stacks. We're on the cocktail list in all the restaurants. And you get this fantastic locally produced bourbon from Few Spirits. It's available in Chicago, New York. It's in the L.A. one as well. And you get this Italian wine, so it maintains that consistency with Eataly and what they stand for. And it's a way for, you know, Chicago to work with Sicily and produce this amazing product that you can get, you know, in at Eataly.
Yeah.
And it's a really special and very fun project that we were able to work with.
I'm at FewSpirits.com, and I got a good Manhattan recipe. And you guys also do cocktail classes and things, fun things?
Yep, we do cocktail classes. We do parties in our alley. We have cocktail hours.
Is it like is it not a trash can that's on fire in the alley? How do you do the party?
We've never lit the trash cans on fire, but we bring in live bands that set up shop in the garage door to the distillery, bring in food trucks. We sell cocktails, and you know, the entire neighborhood and the city comes out with families and dogs and kids and strollers,
fun.
And we give the kids juice boxes, not drinks.
Smart move.
When's the collaboration with High C coming up?
We'll probably pass on that one.
What a great place. Congratulations on all your hard work and keeping your family alive.
Yeah, we're trying. We're having some fun and doing our best to keep on creating.
Thank you, Paul. It's Paul Hletko from Few Spirits, available wherever fine spirits are sold.
Drink, Bill, drink.
Yeah, everybody drink up, and Dane Neal is here, too. Thank you, Dane.
Yep.
Great to see
Thanks
you.
Thanks for having us.
Really appreciate it.
Tune in on Saturday, and we'll see you then, too.
We'll do it.
What time?
Thanks. 2 p.m.
2 p.m. We'll take a quick break. Some news, then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. Kim, thank you so much.
Thanks, Kim. We should send Kim a card or something. A card would be appropriate, I think, after a newscast like that.
I don't send cards anymore.
Wendy,
I feel stingy about
come
it.
Come on.
I only send Valentine's.
I don't even do that. I went to my great-nephew was baptized because my niece had her second baby. Mm-hmm. And I needed to get a card because I wanted to give some cash. I also bought a book that I wrapped up.
Oh.
But, you know, you need
babies
a card.
Babies love books.
They do.
Yep.
They do.
Yeah.
And this one was a little polar bear, and it's like why God chose you or something. You know, it's just a little one. The card was as much as the book.
Oh,
isn't
easily.
My Valentine's were like $7.50.
I know. That's why I don't buy them. Sorry, Hallmark, if you're listening. I mean, I'm not kidding. It's not worth it to me.
You should make cards. It means more to the people getting them if you make them.
I have been, and then the baby that was baptized was Micah.
Mm-hmm.
Micah's sister, Adeline, is 2 years old, a little over two. And I felt the need to get her something because you got a kid who's getting baptized. He doesn't even know he's getting a present. He's 3 months old.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed to get something for her. So I got, you know, the book, The Very Hungry Caterpillar, that we've all read to our kids. Or
I'm not aware of it, but I believe you.
Oh, such a good book. Love that book.
Did you ever read a book to your daughters?
Yeah,
because this was very popular. Eric Carle, it's The Very Hungry Caterpillar, and it eats things, you know, and helps you count.
Oh, I'm not. I'll read it. I'll find it. Sounds stirring. I will find it.
He never read to his kids.
It's no Goodnight Moon. I read to my kids every night.
Goodnight Moon. It's along those same lines. Yeah. The Very Hungry Caterpillar. Really? Yeah. Well, they had a coloring book of it. And so I bought her scented crayons and the coloring book of A Very Hungry Caterpillar. So I said, you know, you can color it and then you can have your own book. It says by Eric Carle and illustrated by, and you put your name there after she colors it. So I give her the crayons and give her the book. And I said, you know, your brother's getting a lot of attention today, but this is for you. And she started coloring, but she's 2.5 or a little over two, and she didn't color in the lines. And then I thought, oh my God, I just wasted my money. It was like, I said, look at the strawberry. It's red. She paints it green. I'm like, oh my God. I was so proud of myself. For 1 second, I was like, oh, what did I do? And then I'm like, you know what? That's her book.
That's the right attitude.
I know. I'm changing since I quit smoking.
I like it.
But the card was more than the Hungry Caterpillar coloring book.
Yeah, the last couple
years. Or the baptism book.
They've tripled in price. I don't know what happened in the card industry, but You used to be able to get a card for somebody for $1 or $2. Uh-uh.
Well, Kim, I am not sending you a card. I'm just going to tell you on the air you did a great job.
Well, thank you. I feel the love.
I now have a booth set up outside of CVS Pharmacy, and if people want to buy a card, it's free. I mean, go on in. I'm not going to argue. Go get a card or come to me and get a real card for
free?
Half. No, I said you're free to get a card.
Oh, I just heard free.
But no, it's not like that. But I will make you a card for half the price that they charge you over at the CVS.
Or maybe we should buy cards and like sign them in pencil, then erase them and share them around.
Yes.
Like this, the I don't know what it's called, the magic screen where you write something and then you just
magic
lift
slate.
It up. Yes.
Oh, Etch-a-Sketch?
Yeah, no, magic slate.
Well, that's kind of hard to make rounded
slate,
numbers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Bill's penmanship is horrendous.
Yeah.
So really, you could use these cards for any occasion because no one will be able to read them anyway.
Right. It either says happy birthday or I'm sorry for your loss. I don't know what it says.
Or, oh, you had bunion surgery?
It's the thought that counts.
Just go to Kohl's. You can get 30% off.
Can you? Yeah.
On your cards.
Yeah.
Every time?
I think you do. I mean, I do that. Hmm. When I have a 30%, if I'm at the store anyway, I'll just get some cards.
That's a
there.
Good idea. Or if you have Kohl's cash.
Or TJ Maxx has slightly irregular cards. Those are nice.
They're upside down, but the weird thing is you just turn them over.
Right. It's easy to fix. It's so easy to
fix. They don't do irregular stuff anymore.
They don't? It's
no,
all regular stuff
that
now?
That was like 30 years ago. When 40.
Hey, this is a nice shirt, one sleeve. So what? I'm saving $8. So
and it
what?
Would say on the tag,
slightly irregular.
Irregular.
That's my tramp stamp. That's what it says on my tramp stamp. Are you familiar with Mark Cuban?
Yes.
What do you know about Mark Cuban?
He owns what was his first claim to fame?
I think he first made his money in the tech industry, didn't he? Is that where he first got rich? I think.
I don't remember.
I know he
was
came
he
from
Shark
Humble.
Tank or something?
Well, he's Shark Tank now. He's
oh, okay.
one of the first sharks in Shark Tank.
And then he owns some kind of sports team.
Yes. The Dallas Mavericks.
Oh, yeah,
basketball
yeah, yeah.
team, the Dallas Mavericks.
That.
I kind of like him. He's very outspoken, not
he's
just
smart.
On Shark Tank. He's very smart.
He should be president.
Came from humble beginnings and really has turned himself into a multi-billionaire. He's a very, very wealthy man. Seems to have good instincts. If you ever watch Shark Tank, he seems to be somebody who's pretty practical in his business dealings. Well, he said something that's very controversial in the last couple of days. He's talking about his team, the Dallas Mavericks, who's they're really having a horrible season, both on the court and off the court. There's a lot of problems with the Dallas Mavericks. But he said something that people are criticizing him for, because you don't often hear an owner say this. He said of his team, the Dallas Mavericks, who, by the way, have a very horrendous record. Is it 33-49, I think?
I have no idea.
Something like that. Yeah, 33-49.
People of Dallas would know.
They would know. He says he would like them to lose. It's better for his team to lose. He wouldn't mind it if for the rest of the season they just lost all their games. The reason is, if you're a sports fan, you already know this, you get a higher draft choice if your team is terrible. You know, if your team is the worst
team
in any given sport.
Because we always get excited that the Bears are going to have like the best pick and then something happens like they win.
Well, they're the best example of this in all of sports, because the last several years they have been awful. But not quite awful enough. They've come close to being the worst team in the NFL, but they're always the third or fourth or fifth worst team, and then the draft choice is screwed up because of it. Although, being the Bears, no matter if, even if they had the first draft choice, they would still pick the wrong guy. They don't know how to do it anyway.
Sure seems like
they're
it.
Not good at that. But people are coming down on Mark Cuban for saying this, because everybody's thought is, even if you believe this, it's kind of an unwritten law in sports. You don't say that. You don't say to your team, hey, let's get out there and really do a horrible job. Let's lose tonight. We got another game coming up on Friday. Let's lose that game. Sunday's game, I want to see you lose that one. It's just almost unheard of in the world of sports.
Yeah, it's weird, but he has bigger fish to fry now, because just a couple of hours ago, Mark Cuban under fire following expose alleging rampant sexual misconduct in Dallas Mavericks workplace.
That is the off-court problem that I was alluding to.
All right.
Is that they're having a bad time on the court. They're losing a lot of games, not enough for their owner. But this problem could be even bigger. But he's not named, right?
No, it was a former CEO. Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban said allegations of rampant sexual misconduct at the team's workplace were abhorrent as the entrepreneur and his NBA franchise come under increased scrutiny after Sports Illustrated had an explosive expose And Cuban is saying it's all new to me. This was prior to him going there. The only awareness I have, says Mark Cuban, is because I heard you guys were looking into some things. Based off of what I've read, we just fired our HR person. I don't have any tolerance for what I've read. Cuban also said he had not been previously told about any of the accusations and blamed the failure to address the issues on the team's human resources director.
Oh.
So that's all I know at this point.
That's a problem. He's the guy, years ago, I don't know if you'll remember this, but he made an offer to sports guys, by sports guys, I mean sportscasters around the country, that if they would change their name from whatever their name is at the time to Dallas Maverick or Mavericks, he would give them, I think it was $200,000 or $250,000.
I remember this.
Do you know who was considering it here at WGN?
Yeah, but I forgot.
David Kaplan.
Oh, God.
David Kaplan was working here at the time and heard about it and said, oh, that wouldn't be bad. You can make $200,000 just
that's
to
right
call
up
yourself
his alley.
Dallas Mavericks.
He looks like a Dallas Mavericks. He could be hook up with Ron Burgundy and be in the third one.
I used to come in because I can't remember what the dollar amount was, but I think it was either $200,000 or $250,000. And then I would say to him, because he was seriously considering it, like he had 2 weeks to think about it. He's like, I think I'm going to do it. And I go, did you hear that Van Camp Pork and Beans said that they would give $300,000 if you change your name? Really? I got to think about that. That's not a bad offer.
I don't know. I could totally see him as Dallas, though.
Maybe.
Couldn't you?
Maybe.
The Sports Illustrated article published yesterday alleged misogynistic behavior by several male front office employees, including ex-Mavericks CEO and president Tadema Ussuri. It was a real-life Animal House, a former employee told SI, and I only say was because I'm not there anymore. I'm sure it's still going on. But
wow.
Mark Cuban's saying he has no knowledge of the, quote, corrosive workplace culture of the Dallas Mavericks. A few employees told Sports Illustrated the owner knew but turned a blind eye.
Wow.
That's interesting.
That's bad. Very bad. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Don't forget, in about 10 minutes, Wendy and I will be headed toward the stream. We'll be online only. If you'd like to listen to us, we would love to have you go to WGNradio.com. They make it very, very simple to find us. And like I said, it's usually a pretty good show. There's no rules up on the internet.
Really?
Yeah.
Pretty good show?
Anything that goes...
You're very self-satisfied,
yes,
aren't you?
Yes, very self-satisfying.
Billy Graham has passed away. America's pastor, noted televangelist. We were talking off the air, perhaps the most well-known televangelist, would you think?
Oh, I think easily. Of all time, right? I can't imagine anybody having a notch above him in that respect.
Who's the young guy with the curly hair?
Joel Osteen.
Yes.
I know my televangelists.
You do?
Yeah.
He might be more well-known.
Well, certainly now, because Billy Graham was 99 and he hadn't televangeled in quite a while. But Joel Osteen has, he's taken it to a new level. And plus, Billy Graham wrote books too, but Joel Osteen has that business going too. He's constantly writing books.
I don't know how I feel about these televangelists. My dad died at a very young age. Mm-hmm. He was 46. He was a childhood diabetic. Back then, diabetes, boy, they've come a long way in their research and treatment. Back then, they didn't think he couldn't play sports. They didn't think he'd live till 21. It was just there wasn't much to do back then. And you lose your eyesight a lot when you have diabetes. My dad was losing his eyesight. This is when he had me read the Bible to him, and he would take his little reel-to-reel machine, his tape deck, and he'd record me reading it. And he died when I was 10, so I was probably about 8 or 9, and I keep bringing this up. My sister, they're somewhere in my family's basement.
Uh-huh.
We have to find these tapes because it's a little kid, Wendy, going, he cometh down from... Are we finished yet?
We'll put that on the stream. That'll be alternative programming on the stream. People would love that.
I was so disgusted.
Just you reading Bible stories as a 10-year-old.
But he couldn't. He was losing his vision, so this way he could go and listen to his daughter reading to him.
Oh,
so
yeah, that's kind of nice.
You're making fun of me.
No, kind of nice.
It was like a really unbelievable, unselfish thing I did.
I guess.
You guess.
Yeah.
Well, so anyway, he was kind of, when it looks like, you're in trouble, you're losing your eyesight, you don't know if you're going to live or die, that's when a lot of people turn to religion.
Right.
And my dad used to listen to this woman, Catherine Kuhlman. Do you remember her?
I do not.
She was like a faith healer slash televangelist. She had records. So that's who I knew about. And Billy Graham I knew about, too, back then, because he was around. Joel Osteen was just a little glisten.
He wasn't, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. The one I always thought was the most interesting was Marjo Gortner. Remember him?
Wait, Marjo, and who's the other one you just mentioned? Joel Osteen?
Yeah.
They look alike, don't they? Marjo had the really curly
hair. Yeah,
that's
really
who
curly
I'm
hair.
Thinking of. Who's but Joel Osteen?
Joel Osteen is current. He's the guy now. He's like the number one guy now. But Marjo Gortner was doing this when he was just a little kid.
Marjo.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know who set him up. I'm guessing his parents
age
set
four.
Him up.
He was ordained as a preacher.
4-year-old evangelist at age four.
All right. He gets more credit than...
Did you ever see the footage? There was a documentary about him. You got to see this because he just, you know, he would just...
It's on YouTube. It looks just like him, but with blonder hair.
Well, he looks, in these pictures, he looked like Jody from Family Affair.
Yeah. Is that where he got Marjo?
No. There's no connection whatsoever to Family Affair, no. But, I mean, people would go to see him at these tent revival things, and they just, you know, they would lose it because they went, this is a miracle. This kid is speaking the word of God, and he, you know, he's curing people left and right. And then he came out years later and talked about, you know, the fact that...
He came out?
Well, he came out saying it was a sham. He knew that he wasn't...
He did?
Yeah. That he was in it for the money. See, with Billy Graham, I don't believe,
he
was doing it for the money.
No, I don't agree that either, with that
but
either.
But there were plenty of people that were just playing the game, you know? They were just doing it for the money.
Billy Graham was born in 1918 in Charlotte, North Carolina. William Franklin Graham Jr. was the oldest of the four children of William and Morrow Graham. Morrow.
I don't know that name. Have you ever heard that before?
No. Vic Morrow, that's it.
Named for Vic Morrow from Rat Patrol?
He was raised on a dairy farm, and little in his childhood suggested he would become a world-renowned preacher. Then at 16, Graham attended a series of revival meetings run by outspoken evangelist Mordecai Ham. He spent 2 months listening to Ham's sermons on sin, and it sparked a spiritual awakening in him. And Graham enrolled at Bob Jones College, and he became a Southern Baptist. He joined a Southern Baptist church.
Didn't he go to school here, too? Wasn't he?
I thought so.
Wheaton College for some reason?
Yeah, after serving briefly as the pastor of the First Baptist Church in Western Springs, Illinois.
Oh, very
Graham,
close by.
Yeah, launched his first radio program, Songs in the Night, in 1943. Graham took Jesus Christ literally when he said in Mark 16:15, "Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature." I do believe he believed this.
He seemed a true believer in this, but there were plenty of others that were just doing it for the green. You know, they were making money left and right. So
he rallied against godless communism, drugs, sex, and violence. He was the first evangelist of note to speak behind the Iron Curtain. And during the apartheid era, he refused to visit South Africa until the government allowed integrated seating at his events.
Wasn't he also kind of on retainer of many U.S. presidents? Didn't a lot of presidents use him as a spiritual advisor?
I believe
seemed
you're
to remember
right.
His name coming up quite a bit. He'd make visits to the White House.
Yes. He became known as America's pastor, and he died at the age of 99. Which just breaks my heart because you're right there.
Almost 100. So
you're
you could
right
see the
there.
Finish line, just couldn't quite get there.
And I know that they'd say that people can hold on. They've done studies that if they know their birthday's coming up, they usually die after their birthday. I mean, not all the time, but the majority of cases.
Yeah, you want the cake. You made it that far. Give the man a piece of cake. You're so close. I want 100
That's
is
That's what's going to keep you alive is the cake.
Oh, the cake and ice cream, yeah. I'm not gonna check out early if I know there's cake and ice cream a few weeks away. I want the cake and ice cream. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Steve has coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
What did you say earlier? You were a man?
Yeah, I said that earlier.